Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back with another episode of the Dune Minute with a special guest, Deez. How you doing, man?
Hi, everybody. I'm good. You know, it's been a long week. It's been 4 days now that we've been together. To be honest,
thanks
you guys
for flying in every day.
Yeah, you know, I mean, to be fair, when you guys are keeping me as supplied with cactus cooler as you have been, that's easy. Yeah, you guys get me. It's cactus cooler and Mr. Pibb, and I'm a real happy camper. So
that's a Dr. Pepper house here.
No. First of all, Dr. Pepper, fake doctor. But second of all, Mr. Pibb did everything but his dissertation, and he's not so pretentious as to be like, I'm Dr. Pibb. Okay.
Him and Dr. Pepper, real doctor. Dr. Pepper, the longest running soda in America.
If Dr. Pepper's a real doctor, then why is there no period after the R in doctor on the can?
Well, see, the trademark is actually there to look like a period. So
that's so he's a liar. So he's lying. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Oh, God. All right. Well, this is my podcast and you can go fuck yourself. So how about that?
I'm trying to think of like the Great Value knockoff Dr. Pepper, whatever that was.
You know what, dude? I bet it's like Dr. Pibb or Mr. Pepper. You know, it's like some like no effort. They just were like, whatever, dude. We're gonna make a spice cola and throw it out there.
Well, at least you call it Mr. Pibb instead of fucking Pibb Extra. Shout out to the old days where Mr. Pibb can just had like the most disgusting looking animated mascot on it.
Oh man. Or like even
some like
even after that
it
when
was
it's
some, like Adult Swim animation looking ass.
Or like just some really unpalatable bubbles floating up the side of the can and it's like, I know this is carbonated. Yeah. I don't need you to like make it look like I'm drinking fizzy tomato soup. Like just give me the soda.
Anyways, we're here to talk about Dune, not
anyway, welcome to our soda podcast.
Yeah. No, we are here to talk about minute 73 through 74 of Dune Part 2, and we're going to pick up where we left off as the very large mass was entering our screen. Mm. Translated from Harkonnen, our beloved leader, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. Now, a couple things. One, I love the way that the Harkonnen translation for Vladimir Harkonnen is, you know, pronounced.
Yes, thank you. This is my
Vladim Harqueen.
Yep.
Vladim Harqueen. it's silly. But two, we see yet again a character entering from the side and the camera, you know,
they love a tracking shot.
They love that tracking shot. But in this, but this time it's just the mass of the lad. Vladimir Harkonnen has upgraded his built-in spine suspensor for a giant floating chair. And
this is his royal ceremony chair.
Yeah, and it's just like the mass of his curvature as he's like slumped back in this chair is just, it's inspiring.
Okay, so a lot of people, when they go for extended hospital stays, they tend to lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
This does not seem like the case with old Vlad. It looks like he's put on a good 20 or 30.
He's seen better days, I'm sure. Yeah. But we also get to see his life support systems, you know, following very closely behind, as expected. Yeah.
And here's my second Star Wars reference, the little orb that's behind him.
Yeah.
Looks like the little trainer orb that Luke fights in, in the first Star Wars.
Yeah. You know, to bring your Star Wars reference back into Dune, I thought it looked like a certain character's eyeballs from another book in the series, as they've always kind of been in my mind. I'm not convinced that that medical ball is not of Clay Laxu make.
his rebreather, as it were.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the mass of the lad, and as he's, you know, following in, we move from a interior space to an exterior space, and we get what I think is one of the coolest shots in, definitely in this movie, I would say in all of Denis Villeneuve's movies. And it's there if you're paying attention, because it's not super obvious, because everything on Gaty Prime is already like shades of black, white, and gray.
Yeah.
But we move from a color shot to an infrared shot. And the way that this was done is that there were two cameras side by side, one with an infrared lens, one with regular lenses. And the way that editing was able to, you know, blend those two shots as Vladimir is moving from the interior space into the light of the black sun that we talked about. Chef's kiss. Beautiful. Love it.
Yeah.
And like, it's such a cool practical effect done for this movie. You know, we've spent a lot of time, you know, talking about the amount of work that went into practical effects, and it's not just for like props. It's for like the actual filmography.
Yeah.
And everything that we see from here on out is all shot, at least for the next 10 minutes, is all shot in these infrared cameras.
It's amazing.
It rules. It's so cool.
Yeah. It's like, this could be so easily, or I'm not going to say easily, to you know, to degrade the work that could, that would need to go into this, but like, this could be achieved by CGI and digital effects.
Also, it could just be achieved by turning the saturation bar all the way down in, you know, Final Cut or whatever they're editing these movies in.
Yeah, saturation down, contrast up. Sure.
Yeah. Like, they could have very easily done that and probably saved a shitload of money in the process of doing it.
That's not how Denis does it. No. You know?
And that's what I was going to get at, is like, Denis fucking goes hard on like the littlest of details. And like, this is not a little detail. This is a big thing.
It's major. In the theater, I viscerally remember thinking in the theater when that happened, I was like, oh, that's dope. That is so cool. Yeah.
Now, I wonder how much of this was Denis' vision, or maybe Denis' direction, versus the cinematographer, who we've said his name 100 times and I cannot remember it, but them just wanting to do like a really fucking cool thing. Like, so Denis said, yeah, and this all needs to be like a super stark contrast, black and white, like that kind of stuff. And that was maybe the direction, but the cinematographer was like, oh shit, I've been wanting to try this thing out. You know, let's see if this works.
Yeah. Oh, funny you mentioned that, Denis. Let me run this by you.
Yeah.
So the cinematographer for Dune Part 2, you know, once again, going back to it, was Greg Fraser. And he and Denis have worked together before on other projects outside of Dune. But, you know, you kind of are leading me right into my notes here. There was a question of, you know, how are we going to shoot this? Mm-hmm. And Fraser's recommendation to Denis was, do not do this on a soundstage, you know, film it outside. As we've talked about before, the more practical they can get with their lighting, the better it's going to be for everyone.
Yeah.
Especially from the VFX side, because unsurprisingly, this is a very large VFX lift for this movie.
Sure.
All of the smaller sets that we have in this scene, in the next, you know, part that we're going to be talking about here pretty shortly, and everything we're going to be talking about for the next 2 weeks or week and some change, is all done outside in the sun to help, you know, have as natural lighting as possible. The set that Vladimir's, you know, giant chair is on, the set was built outside so they could get like actual lighting and everything, you know, because they wanted to replicate that midday, you know, gladiator game as much as they possibly could have.
Sure.
But yeah, they did all of this shooting and everything outside to be, you know, as accurate as possible to like actual lighting conditions and everything. So like, the amount of detail and, you know, lengths that they go to in these situations, super impressive, and I love that shit. But we're not done with Vladimir just yet. We're getting more of his, you know, progression forward and everything, and we get to see the CGI parts. We see more of the arena here.
And John, here's where I have a beef.
Well, hold on. I'm gonna pause your beefs here for a second.
I'll hold the beef.
Because as we have come to see, we have a rule about translations on screen. So let me get through that. All right, fine. More translation. His presence today, watching over a spectacle of blood and honor, marks the holy birthday of our beloved Na Baron Fade Rautha. And we get to see a bunch of Harkonnen civilians in this arena. There are 10,000 of them, according to Art and Soul.
Yeah.
That's a shitload of people.
Sure.
I mean, that's a football stadium.
Yeah.
Probably less than a football stadium, actually, because like some football stadiums are like 14,000 to like 20,000.
Our nice Mercedes-Benz Stadium here in Atlanta can hold up to 74 or 75,
I think. No fucking way.
Yeah.
75,000 people.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I think the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum used to hold, I want to say it was like 92,000. And then they redid some of the sections and it actually went down.
All right. Well, I guess this is a tiny fucking spit of sand then. Fuck me.
It's an intimate setting for a very brutal sport.
Either way, it's 10,000 people.
You can't get blood spatter on you if the stadium seats 100,000 people. You're going to be too far away. You get 10,000, at least there's a chance. Everybody's in the splash zone, right?
Yeah, you got to be in the splash zone.
Now
we get to see them do this super cool chant together, and it's not as cool as doing the wave, but it's a pretty sick dance that they have choreographed.
Well, okay, this is where my
beef. And now I'm going to let your beefs.
Let me drop this beef.
Oh, man, now I have two beefs. Okay.
Now, a lot of times movies will do this thing where they record like a section, like a small like square of people. You know, it's going to be the same 100 or, you know, 150 people, and they're just going to digitally, you know, copy and paste them into the stands to fill out.
They got 10,000 people to all shave themselves completely naked and like be super pale and bald.
Well, that's what I would have expected of this movie. But this looks like they had 50 people and they did that.
Yeah.
Like, I understand, like, having to do the whole copy and paste thing for a large stadium audiences. But, like, mix it up a little bit. Like, do a couple of takes to where that's not going to be the exact same motions. And I understand it's a choreographed move they're going to do. Yeah. But when you get that many people in together, you're not going to have people seven seats away from each other doing the exact same motions at the exact same time.
I don't know. They seem to sync up pretty quickly.
Not in the wide shots. I think the wide shots are better. But it's just one sweeping shot that looks really bad.
Yeah.
I agree. I felt like this is one of the few times where I'm like, that's not great. I felt like it looks like, I don't know if you've ever seen like the art installations where it's like chrome tags on hooks and you let the wind move around them. It looks like water. It's a cool effect. But like here, I was like this feels a little.
I'm thinking of the San Francisco airport when you mentioned that.
That is exactly where I am also thinking of. Yeah, when you.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was like, yeah, so I was me, like, that is a very specific art installation that I know.
At hashtag SFO, shout out Bart.
A lot of good memories on Bart.
And so there's part of me that like feels like that. There's another part of me, though, that feels like them doing that, this looks kind of like just a like throbbing blob of humanity rather than an assembly of individuals. And in that sense, it feels very on brand for Harkonnen's in general, like in Gaty Prime also by extension. So, I mean, on that part, like, I'm like, that kind of works for me, even though like when I'm looking at it, like just in general, I'm like, this is fine, I guess. Like, I felt like there's a little bit of give and take. Now I have to say my new beef that was just introduced is I hate the wave, and you can say that I don't like fun and that's fine if you want to say that, but I outright refuse to participate in the wave. If I am at a sporting event and they start doing the wave, I am going to sit through it when it comes by me. And everyone else can deal
with
that.
I'm going to sit there with my arms crossed and I'm going to pout and I'm going to be a fucking
yep
fun sucker out of the whole situation.
That's me. That's me, baby.
I'll, I'll stand up all three. I'll stand up three times for all of us.
I am the singularity sucking all the amusement out of that section, and I don't care. I'm not standing up for the wave. No. It's dumb. Sit down. I'm trying to watch the game.
Now, okay, so y'all brought up the SFO art installation, and that reminded me that we've seen shots like this before, and they've done we've seen them done well in the Phantom Menace.
Oh, for the podcast races?
Shut the
The podcast races.
Yeah, now, let's
talk. That's
podcast races.
It's true. Jesus Christ. The pod race. Pod racer.
The pod race.
The Boonta Eve classic. All right.
It was Boonta Eve. Ben Quadraneros was there.
Sebulba, that cheating bastard.
We love a good Ben Quadraneros reference.
He's handsome.
Jesus Christ.
If anyone harms Ben Quadraneros, I will kill every person in the stadium and then myself.
but they did the whole thing. It was just like, obviously it was a miniature that they shot or they filmed, but it was just Q-tips, differently painted Q-tips, and they had a fan blowing and it wiggled them all around and it looked natural. It looked a lot more natural than this did.
Is that really?
That's what they did.
Oh my God, that rules. Yes. You know, none of us gave George Lucas any credit. He knew that a trade war was going to be the most interesting way to start a conflict, and we all laughed at him. Who's laughing
Look
now?
At where we are now.
George Lucas is laughing, and he's doing it, swimming through a pile of money like Scrooge McDuck.
Now, all I have to say to that is, now there are two of them.
Oh, my God. All right. So, can I
they're in the ventilation system.
I would just like to say I adore how annoyed John is with us right now.
He doesn't like when I bring up other franchises on the show.
No, it's not that I don't like that you bring up other franchises. It's just that...
Okay, you want to hear a hot take?
What?
I like the prequels.
I don't think that's a hot take.
I think they're fun. They're bad.
I think... But they're bad, but they're fun movies. And like, honestly...
They're good for memes.
They kind of grow on you over time.
My desktop wallpaper right now is the fade out from C-3PO and the ship and then Princess Amidala's funeral procession on... so, you know, I can't argue with you at all. I have no...
So, Beavs, of all the people aside, I do have some... counters to the Beavs from Art and Soul.
You have counter Beavs?
I don't have counter Beavs, but I would like to give Art and Soul its chance to speak against your Beavs.
They have anti-Beavs here?
Possibly.
This is okay. Unbelievable. This is an ambush.
So
I didn't know such a theoretical particle existed.
Science has yet to truly confirm its existence. No, so that was the whole thing about like the total homogenized group was a very clear decision because, like, in case you haven't been able to tell already, the Harkonnens are a very homogenized group and they're like meant to be off-putting and weird. In fact, it was direction from Denis Villeneuve that he wanted it to look like a stadium full of 10,000 Nosferatus.
I think goal achieved.
Yeah.
Yep. Nailed it. No notes.
I don't disagree with the fact that like it looks like a very small group that they like cut, copied and pasted all over the place. But they do talk about how the only thing that these Harkonnen have in this point is like this like dance to kind of, you know, get them all in sync together in this weird, like ritualistic kind of event.
We had that already. It was called the Macarena. Art imitates life.
All I'm saying is that when I was an extra in Remember the Titans.
What?
They filmed that at my high school.
You were an extra in the fact that you were probably like sitting in the bleachers, but there was no camera on you.
No, it certainly passed over me very quickly.
I'm gonna find
you. Cannot
you.
See me, but I was there.
I'm gonna find you.
If you can find a 4K Blu-ray, you might be able to see a seven-year-old Zach or whatever in the stands. But I was there, and they filled every seat. I'm saying of my 500-person stadium.
Yeah, that's a high school fucking that you know, about right, yeah. football stadium. Like, yeah. I think that's a little easier to fill than a giant triangular, like, coliseum.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure they just made multiple passes and stitched them together to make it look like it was bigger.
It's not Turner Field. I mean, if we're going to just be honest here. Yeah.
That's true. Well, rest in peace.
But we're done with our, well, we're not done with the wave because it's still going on, or the dance, or whatever we're going to call it. But we're looking at it all through a new.
It looks like a lot of, I'm sorry. It looks like a lot of them are just like, they're just dabbing everywhere. Yeah.
It kind of does, actually. But we're looking at it through a new perspective this time.
Yes.
Through what looks like some kind of, you know, scouter lens or something. It's got the very stereotypical sci-fi, like.
Yep.
Elevation and angle indicators down on the bottom because as it's moving, you know, the left and right symbols are, you know, rotating and stuff like that.
And then it turns out they're just really glorified opera spectacles, which I was like,
yeah, they're super fancy opera spectacles.
But I love that design.
Oh, it's so cool. I love it. It's awesome. And we see a woman that we've never seen before.
That is correct. We see Lady Margot Fenring.
Played by
Leah Sido.
But yes, we have Lady Margot Fenring.
Yes. So if we're only going to get one Fenring in the movies, because Count Fenring, Hasring, I believe is his first name?
Hasimir.
Hasimir. Yep. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Childhood best friend of Shaddam the Fourth.
Yes. Famously, at least in our canon, I don't think it was ever confirmed out like externally, but that is the character that Tim Blake Nelson. Thank you. Tim Blake Nelson was supposed to play in Dune Part Two.
Yes. Well, we don't know.
We're putting pieces together because Tim Blake Nelson was like signed on and then like the cast.
Tim Blake Nelson shot film.
Yeah. Okay. Oh,
like it was shot. It was just cut from the movie, you know, on the editing.
But the reason that we think
so good.
He would have been so good. But the reason we think that it was him was because like the cast list was filled out except for two names. Alia and Count Fenring. And my personal choice in this would have been for Tim Blake Nelson to play young infant in the womb, Alia. <Go for it. laughs> That would have been hilarious.
That would have been probably the most like primeval Jodorowsky's Dune reference they possibly could have thrown in here.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking like a Ballad of Buster Scruggs like style acting. All jokes aside, we were pretty sure that he was supposed to play Count Fenring, which would have been great.
However, there was a interview done with Tim Blake Nelson at some point after the release of Dune where a reporter asked him, they were like, you know, how does it feel? Like, are you upset that Denis cut your scene from the movie? Like, what was it supposed to be? And Tim Blake Nelson was very coy about it and everything. He didn't, you know, go on to say much except for the fact that he said that he would have loved to have worked with Denis and
Brolin.
Yeah, Josh Brolin again.
Oh, yeah.
And so far as I know, he's never been beside Brolin in anything else. So it would have been a scene with him and Gurney, and I don't think Fenring interacts with Gurney Halleck at all.
Not in the books, he doesn't.
As far as I remember. There's no conversation.
They don't talk to each other, but they would have been in the same room at the well, spoiler alert. They would have been in the same room at the final duel.
Possibly.
There's a lot cut
but
out.
But they don't yeah. but they don't talk
I mean,
to each other.
I yet. Mean Stephen McKinley Henderson was very famously edited out of that last scene too, so like
yeah. So I don't know. I think he would have been Fenring had they kept him in, and
the age lines up for him to be, you know, childhood best friends with Shaddam the Fourth as well. So
yeah, and he would have fucking knocked it out of the park.
Oh God, yeah, dude.
That's one of the omissions from this movie that I'm very upset they didn't you know, keep in mm-hmm. because, man, the failed Kwisatz Haderach and it's the whole thing with the Fenring, the whole thing with the Fenrings having their own like way of communicating with each other and everything and like doing the stuff that they do is so fucking cool. And just like to not have it sucks.
Yep. A lot. Yeah, especially because it gives Paul one of the very few characters, I think, who has any insight into what he's going through.
Yeah.
And, like, especially, like, in the book, I think the books allude to that, where they're, like, he's kind of looking at Paul and sees, like, what could, or no, Paul looks at him, I think, and it's almost like he feels pity for him because he knows, like, what it, basically what it cost mm-hmm. him to be that. Yeah. And I think too, like, I think that's part of also why he steps in ultimately, in Paul's defense, like, mm-hmm. and tells the Emperor, like, I'm not going to do that. Like, yeah. And also for the sake of our friendship, I will forget that you struck me.
Yeah. Well, yes. Which is that, I mean, that could have usurped the, we don't hope we plan line.
Oh God. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, can you imagine that argument at home afterwards and the driving home from the final duel and like Margot is just looking at him like, I cannot believe you killed the Emperor of the known universe. And he's like, what was I supposed to do?
Yeah. I don't think Margot would have questioned him.
I doubt it. I feel yeah, like, no, I feel like yeah. they had a pretty, all things considered, I feel like their relationship was good. For as far as Dune relationships go,
as far as Dune relationships, where you become pregnant out of your marriage, but you're also married to a eunuch, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah, anyways. Same,
but trying to become the Kwisatz Haderach made him a eunuch. So
yeah.
So I mean, we mourn the loss. We mourn the loss of Count Hazimir Fenring, but we do get his wife, which. We'll have to settle for because she does a fucking good job.
You say settle.
Yeah, as if, she crushes it. Nah.
As if Margot Fenring is a character that like is disappointing.
Yeah.
No, and no.
It's called understatement,
absolutely.
John.
Absolutely not.
But we get to see Lea Seydoux as Margot Fenring. But, you know, she's not named quite yet.
Not yet.
And our minute ends with some Bene Gesserit sisters appearing in the same, you know, starting to enter these box seats that, mm-hmm. you know, Margot is in. And they walk by. She kind of turns to look, and our minute ends right there.
Do we get to see their dresses change? Or is that the next minute?
We do get to see their dresses change. Okay. So, yes, as they're walking into the box, their dresses change from black to white, which I thought was such a cool like thing that we got to see in the movie.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, again, a practical effect.
Yeah, because of the side-by-side camera rig and everything that they had there.
Now, I don't know the specifics on this, but I remember reading like a story about there has to be very specific fabrics that were used in the movie. Like for the costumes
That color change.
For that color change to happen. And I think it was the Baron's costume was not that originally, and it didn't quite work.
Yeah.
So they had to, like, they had to go back and
you know, reshoot with the large muumuu that Vladimir wears.
So just another example of just all the detail that goes into this film.
Yeah.
I like the shade that the Baron threw at them where he seats them directly across the triangle. So unless like he only could have put them at the end of the hypotenuse to make them any further away from him than he did. You know, again, he does things just to irritate people. And I feel like they would have been pretty irritated by this. So. Good on you,
Glenn. They're across from it, but also like 20 levels down. It looks like.
Yeah, these are the shitty box seats.
Yeah, totally.
Almost floor seats, if you want to call it that, but
not so much. They're still well above. Yeah. They're out of the splash zone.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to do it for me for this episode. Unless either of you have anything else to talk about, I'd say we go ahead and wrap this up and finish this week out.
Yep, I have no notes.
Alrighty. Well, you can find the Dune Minute and Atreides Nuts both on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com and at Muad'Dib Atreides, double E with a Z at the end. And you can also email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back for a Friday episode tomorrow. We'll see you then.
See you then.
Bye-bye now.